Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to CNN's The Rewind. It's a podcast that takes you back in time and looks at how CNN covered the people and events of the past that impact your world today. I'm your host, Michaela Pereira. So in this episode, we're going to dive into the controversial and, might I add, unprecedented O.J. Simpson trial of the century during the mid-1990s. The year, 1994. The top song is the classic hit by Ace of Base, The Sign. Bill Clinton is president of the United States, and no one yet thinks of the Lewinsky scandal when they hear his name. We'll get to that in another episode. The FIFA World Cup is about to start in 9 cities across America. And on June 13th, Nicole Brown Simpson, the 35-year-old ex-wife of O.J. Simpson, is found dead next to her 25-year-old friend, Ronald Goldman.
The question was, is O.J. Simpson?
Well, obviously, we're not going to rule anyone out.
4 days later, O.J. was charged with 2 counts of murder with special circumstances. From the arrest to the trial, the drama continued to unfold over the next year. If you're anything like me, you were glued to your TV set. And let's just say between multiple books, a miniseries on TV, a docuseries, and a documentary, oh, and this podcast, among others, you are proof that the public interest hasn't waned in more than 20 years. So in this episode, we're going to take you back to that infamous car chase. Who can forget that? We're going to hear an interview with O.J. Simpson's colorful former house guest. We'll relive the most memorable moment of the trial and we'll listen to an unexpected phone call.
With us on the phone now is O.J. Simpson.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. You might recall that O.J. didn't immediately turn himself in, but instead had that now infamous, dramatic, slow-speed car chase in that white Bronco driven by his friend and former teammate Al Cowlings. It aired live on CNN's Larry King Live.
What do you make of this?
I'll tell you, this is high drama, Larry. I didn't expect to be a part of this.
Here, Larry is taking questions from callers before interrupting to cut over to live footage of that now infamous Bronco chase. Take a listen. You can hear Larry getting information from the KCAL affiliate, as well as pausing to get information from his producer in his ear. We've cut this all down to the highlights, but listen as the scene is unfolding in front of Larry's eyes.
I'm going to have to interrupt this call. I understand we're going to go to a live picture in Los Angeles. Is that correct? Okay. This is Interstate 5, and this is courtesy of KCALR, one of our L.A. affiliates. Police believe that
right now
that O.J. Simpson is in that car. Now they're telling me that they believe that this vehicle is registered to Al Cowlings, one of O.J.'s oldest friends, a teammate at Southern Cal.
Want to pressure the vehicle and just hope that.
And they believe that Al Cowlings, who's the other person they're looking for, who was with O.J. earlier today, they believe, again, they believe that this is the car. We do not know this is the car.
Pat,
they're going south through Orange County, but nobody is pulling this car over. And we could only guess as to why not.
Right, I guess they're just being
careful.
They
may fear that there are arms in that car. They may fear that Simpson may harm himself. Now, police radio is saying that Simpson has a gun at his head. Reuters is reporting that the police tracked O.J. Simpson through his cellular phone.
Look at all the cars on this next bridge, man.
That's a helicopter reporting, talking to KCAL, saying, look at all those cars on that bridge looking down. This is a living drama. There's nothing else you can say, but we're going to stay with it. California Highway Patrol has now confirmed to CNN that it is definitely Al Cowlings' vehicle. and they are almost certain that O.J. is in the passenger seat. The cars on the top of the screen heading east on that freeway are just slowing down to look and get a glimpse of one of the icons of American sports history, O.J. Simpson, on this tragic June day. This is Larry King as we stay atop this scene. Jim Hill, famed sportscaster in Los Angeles, an old friend, a former athlete, old friend of O.J. Simpson, is going on radio in Los
Angeles.
Just
still going westbound 91, just approaching the 710 freeway.
To turn himself in. The last thing Jim said was, O.J., you were a man, you are a man, be a man, turn yourself in. Earlier today, Robert Shapiro had arranged for O.J. to turn himself in. Doctors were in attendance. They were all going to go together in a car because they were worried about suicide. When they went downstairs from a conference room in O.J.'s house, he was gone. They're going to go right toward the Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, Brentwood areas where O.J. lives and where the two people killed also lived.
It is an amazing sight. Along the right-hand shoulder, people have pulled over, many of them carrying signs such as signs reading things like, Save the Juice, Go O.J. People are literally cheering him on as he travels northbound on the 405, and we can only assume that he plans to get off at sunset and go towards perhaps his home.
He's on the off-ramp now, coming up the off-ramp at sunset.
That's right.
He looks like he's in the left lane now.
Yeah.
Making a left turn. The intersection is free, and he's clear, and now making his left turn westbound on sunset.
All right. And he is pulling in to the driveway.
Coming around.
Someone is going to the door right now, Eric.
Okay. We're pulling up. Let me tell you what I can see. We've just turned the corner. It's total chaos here. Motorcycles, black and whites, people running around. Officers getting out of their cars with their batons.
We have found him. The door is opening, and let's see what happens now. We'll watch with you. This is the driver's side of the vehicle.
Okay, someone just got out of the vehicle, approaching the front door, dressed in black, and entered. Looks like they entered the front of the house there. Possibly O.J. Simpson.
Al Cowlings finally pulled into O.J.'s driveway after 2 hours of driving. Police were there waiting. O.J. finally turned himself in. On July 22nd, 1994, O.J. pled not guilty. But the murders brought up bigger questions about domestic violence and how police respond to it. We'll have more after the break. Welcome back to CNN's The Rewind. I'm Michaela Pereira. The so-called trial of the century began in January 1995 and ended in October of that year. Inside the courtroom, it was a scene. Journalists lined the rows, a single TV camera set up. Members of the Brown, Goldman, and Simpson families attended. Lawyers got heated, and to be honest, sometimes it felt like Judge Lance Ito was just as much of the story as anyone else. But it was key witness Brian Cato Kalin's testimony that we'll never forget. Remember his flamboyant style? He turned himself into a minor celebrity during the trial. It also caused him to be declared a hostile witness by the prosecution. By the way, they are the ones that had called him as a witness to begin with. Now, Cato was a long-term house guest of Nicole's before he moved into a guest house on O.J.'s property. Here, Larry King talks to Cato for the first of many interviews on April 4th, 1995, after Cato's testimony about his newfound celebrity status. Cato's wearing his signature shoulder-length hair, casually sitting in the chair across from Larry, resting his elbows on the table.
Is it kind of weird, for want of a better term, to be the celebrity as the result of tragedy?
Yes, it is. It affects me because, you know, I've been in acting about 15 years. And I'm not Academy Award winner, at least not that I know of.
Struggling,
right, which is part of the game of being an actor. But I have to, what's going on, I can't explain exactly what's going on of why I am sitting here with you or whatever is going on in my life. It's coming from a different source.
Well, it's been a whirlwind, right?
It has been.
Mixed emotions?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, this is a great break for you.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy of others. Do you think of irony?
I hear from people saying that out of tragedy, something happens, and whatever can happen out of it, something good. I don't look at it that way. I mean, it's terrible, very terrible what happened, and what is going on with me, I didn't ask for anything to happen. It just happened, and it's just, can't explain it. It's just going on.
You know, you're the result of this, and so therefore, how can you explain it from inside yourself?
Right, I'm experiencing this thing that's going on from other people. I'm meeting so many people, and I'm the only one that is living it, and I can only explain it to myself, and I lay in bed, and I just go, what's going on? And
what about public recognition, like on the street? Can you walk down the street?
I can walk down the street.
I mean, but a normal walk down the street.
If there's no one around. I mean, as far as normal, but, you know, just today, you know, I took a trip in Georgetown, and the people are very kind. They really are kind, and they ask for the autographs.
What did they say?
What did they say to me?
Yeah.
Well, for today, someone said, hey, John Bon Jovi, come over here. I said, guess what? I'm not John Bon Jovi.
But so you give autographs there?
Oh, yeah, I give autographs, and the people, it's just kind of the thumbs up they give me. And I just go along with that. I just say, oh, sure, thanks. And I don't ask them why or anything. I just give them the autograph.
We'll discuss a lot of things. What
right.
was the worst part about testifying in a court for the world? The worst part?
The worst part is, you know, the wait. Waiting in, there's this a little room you wait in. Actually, it's a room with boxes, storage. And so I'm waiting there.
You can't see the trial, right?
No.
So you just sit.
I sit and I wait, and I'm about, from the witness chair, I'm about 20 feet from there. And then they bring me into another holding area, and then I go to the chair, and that's it. It's the wait. The waiting is the hardest part. I think Tom Petty said that, but it's very tough.
Because waiting is worse than being there.
Right. As soon as I'm there, it's fine. Although I was a little shaky on things, it was just the first day of kind of looking around the courtroom and seeing things and people, and so it took just a bit to get used to.
What caused, if you know you're just going to tell what you know, why be nervous at all? I mean, what can happen wrong if you're just going to tell what you know?
Sometimes questions would come up that a person not ready for, and I have to go back in 9 months and go, and that's what I try to remember, because I'm trying to be the best in telling what I have to describe.
You looked shocked when they declared you a hostile witness. Were you shocked?
Yes, I was shocked.
Were you offended?
I didn't know what it was. Did you? A hostile witness. I didn't know what was going on. What happened was that when I heard those words, I was, God, did I say something? Was I moving too fast in the chair, or did I? And I was hostile witness, and then I had eye contact with Michael Plotkin, my lawyer, and I looked, and he gave me the reassuring smile, and I knew everything was going to be okay. I mean, with me, because I was going, oh, boy, do I get tossed out now, or what's going to go on? And I'm
you
here with you now,
jury?
So I was.
Did you look at the jury?
Oh, sure. I look at the jury often.
What do you make of this, by the way, this last juror statement, just as a personal opinion, that they were talking about the trial? And
I had heard, I have to tell you, I'm not really watching much TV. I got rid of TV right now because in my mind, I try not watching stories about the trial or myself, because it affects me sometimes emotionally.
So then are you in a vacuum?
Somewhat of a vacuum. I mean, I hear phone
messages. You didn't
read
the paper this morning?
I did not. But I'm aware of what happened, and I heard comments. If there's a question, I think that, I don't know if it should matter or not, that the jury doesn't know. I know they're talking, is what I heard, they're talking. But
and as you were saying, it's a big deal if they're talking to each other.
Well, and they're not allowed to. So I guess it is a big deal with that, but I think there's... How many more days are left? I mean, there's a lot more to hear.
Is the judge a comfort to a witness? What is... the role the judge plays in that scenario?
Well, I saw two judges, Kathleen Kennedy and Judge Ito.
Kathleen was at the
preliminaries. Preliminary. Things were a lot calmer with her for me. And Judge Ito was very...
Made you nervous?
He didn't make me nervous, but he's very... Well, obviously, he's professional because that's his job. But I knew that just those real strict looks that he can give, that he was kind of like a dad, and I was in trouble. And not that it mattered. There was a... What happened, there was a bomb scare and a comment that he had made. I think it was... He just happened to say it, and he just said, we were going to be leaving the courtroom, but Mr. Kalin, you can stay. But I don't think he meant for me to stay. There's a bomb scare. You stay and check it out. It was just a slip. And I was going, oh, great, bomb scare. I'm here.
What are they telling me?
Run for cover, everyone.
Did you get mad at Marsha? Did you get mad at anybody?
I didn't get mad at anybody.
You were not mad?
Not mad.
You saw yourself there doing their job?
I believe that 100%. I knew Marsha Clark was doing her job. I can't take it personal. I didn't get mad at her. I couldn't. She's doing her job and the best she can, and so I go along with that.
Cato. Definitely a notable witness, but let's move on now to one of the most memorable moments of the trial. June 21st, 1995. The prosecution asked O.J. to try on the glove that was found at the crime scene. Guess what? It didn't fit. During his closing argument, defense lawyer Johnny Cochran immortalized the line, "If it doesn't fit, you must acquit." Here's the line in the context of his closing argument. Imagine Johnny holding a knit cap as he faces the jury and begins this portion of the argument.
It occurred to me how they were going to come here and stand up here and tell you how O.J. Simpson was going to disguise himself. He was going to put on a knit cap and some dark clothes, and he was going to get in his white Bronco and this recognizable person and go over and kill his wife. That's what they want you to believe. That's how silly their argument is. And I said to myself, maybe I can demonstrate this graphically. I'm going to show you something. This is a knit cap. I'm going to put this knit cap on. You've been seeing me for a year. If I put this knit cap on, who am I? I'm still Johnny Cochran with a knit cap. And if you look at O.J. Simpson over there, and he has a rather large head, O.J. Simpson in a knit cap from two blocks away is still O.J. Simpson. It's no disguise. It's no disguise. It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Coming up next, Larry King gets a surprise phone call while he's interviewing Johnny Cochran on Larry King Live the day after the verdict. You're listening to The Rewind. I'm Michaela Pereira. Glad you're with me. Live, the show would often allow viewers to call in with questions. Well, the day after the verdict on October 4th, 1995, as King talks to O.J.'s lawyer, Johnny Cochran, O.J. himself makes a surprise appearance by calling in at the end of the show. As Larry announces O.J. is on the phone, Johnny bites back a smile.
With us on the phone now is O.J. Simpson. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I want to thank you a lot because so many of my friends have told me that you've been fair in hosting your show and bringing the points of view from both sides. I want to thank Mr. Calhoun for taking the time out of his life. I know it had to be tough for him, and most of all, I want to thank that man, Mr. Johnny Cochran, for believing from the beginning, listening, and putting his heart and soul on the line to send me home and spend time that I'm spending right now with my kids. As I say all of this, you know, I've been watching your show, and I don't really have a lot to say now. And pretty soon I'll have enough to say to everybody and hopefully answer everyone's questions. But one of your callers, a lady, called a minute ago, and she asked a question about a shadowy figure running down the driveway and across the lawn and into the front door. Let me say, that was, to me, that's one of the problems. One of the problems I'm having today with people who followed this trial, they have not listened to the evidence. Marsha Clark said a person ran across the driveway. Marsha Clark has said that all along. That is not what Alan Park said. Alan Park said 15 feet roughly from my front door, picture was me walking out of my front door, dropping my bags, and going back in. He marked it. They put a display up, put an X. She asked him, put an X where you saw this person. 15 feet, never on the driveway, never coming down the driveway, never crossing a driveway. That is the testimony. And throughout this case, it's been this misrepresentation time and time again. People come home from work and they hear the pundits elaborating on these misrepresentations. Listen to what the witness says. Listen to what their testimony is and not what Marsha Clark told you.
So that
not
was...
What,
so
not was, what Darden told so, you. And that so, has been the big problem. Fortunately for me, the jury listened to what the witnesses said and not Marsha Clark's or Darden's or anyone else's rendition of what they said. So, miss, I didn't get your name. There was no shadowy figure coming down the driveway and going across the driveway. That's what Marsha Clark told you. That's not what Alan Park told you.
O.J., how would you would you describe yourself as relieved, angry, what?
A little bit of everything. I think my basic anger, and this is the last thing I'm going to say before I leave. My basic anger is these misconceptions. My basic anger is people I've heard said, I followed the case. I've heard experts say, this was the testimony today. And that wasn't the testimony today. There were so many times I went back to my cell and I watched TV. I go to my attorney room. I talk to my attorneys and some witnesses. And we say, were these experts looking at the same or hearing? Are they in the same courtroom that we were in today? Did they hear the testimony today? Because what they were reporting on the news, what they were reporting on these various shows was not what the witnesses were saying. And once again, that lady will call in. Look at the testimony. Marsha Clark told you that. Alan Park did not tell you that.
A couple of quick things. I'll let
so
you
I got to go.
All right, can you
so
just
really
tell us
go.
How was, what was it like with the
Thank
kids
you.
Today? What was it like with the kids?
It's been great. It's been great.
God
Thank
bless you. OJ.
And
Thank you.
Soon,
bless
and
you.
I appreciate what how fair you've been.
Thank you. And
Thank
you'll
you.
Be,
God
he will
bless
be,
you, OJ.
I guess from that, thanks, OJ. He will be making a statement. I gather he's going to come forward in some forum.
I think he will be.
Soon. His voice sounded very strong.
Oh, yes. He has resolved. Nobody, none of the lawyers even, knew the facts as well as OJ Simpson, as you just could tell. He knew the facts chapter and verse because he thought it was his life, and he knew those facts. He made sure we knew those facts. And so,
doesn't sound too crazy about Marsha.
Oh, I think he respects her, but he would always tell me how he felt they would twist the facts, and he's very right about that. There was a mark. This person was, I said, was only seen within 10 to 15 feet of the door going in, and he knows those facts.
While O.J. was cleared of these two murders, Goldman's family took up a wrongful death civil suit against him. They won that, by the way, in 1997. The judge ordered Simpson to pay $25 million in punitive damages to the Goldmans and to the Browns. That's it for this edition of CNN's The Rewind. I'm Michaela Pereira. Need to know more about the 90s before our next episode? Want to brush up? Dial up your old internet and head to cnn.com/90s. Until next time.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.